Well, just over this past week, it's been another week where we've just had confirmation that the data mostly is running on the firmer side for the US economy. And we saw it with the preliminary Q3 GDP that came out, or the advanced reading of Q3 GDP. It wasn't quite up to expectations for the total. It came in at 2.8% annualized growth from 3% annualized growth going back to Q2. But when we look at what's happening inside spending in the US economy itself, real consumer spending, for example, that lifted in Q3 to 3.7% annualized change from 2.8%. So still strong support there coming through from consumer spending for US GDP. And it's still running above long-term trend. And so, that's an issue when we get towards talking about what the Fed will do this week. They're still looking at relatively firm growth coming through some of these indicators. Another concern for them will be, too, that inflation, most of the readings we've seen for inflation in September for the US are just showing that it's getting stuck in the mid 2% range. And we had the September core personal consumption expenditure deflator. This is one that the Fed tends to prefer as an indicator of inflation over the CPI. Most recent month, it was up 0.3% month on month. Previous month was actually revised upwards to 0.2%. So over the past 2 months, it's just stuck 2.7% year on year, high twos running through this particular indicator of inflation. And it's not going to come down whilst you've got the economy still performing relatively well. And some of the other readings we got through the course of the week, we had initial jobless claims. And after the dent to that came from the hurricanes, where a lot of people started making claims because they'd lost their jobs, this has come down very sharply. And so the most recent weekly reading came down to 216,000 from 228,000. Which suggests that once we normalize, we get past the hurricane events running through the employment numbers, we're going to get some pretty strong employment readings again. And so that takes us to the non-farm payrolls that came out right at the end of the week. And whilst this one was a very low reading by comparison of recent months, it was only up 12,000, whereas the previous month on revision was up 223,000. We know that this relates to the hurricane event. And the other numbers around the reports that came out on Friday suggest we've still got a tight labour market, and we'll get some rebounds through those non-farm payrolls as we go over the next few months. For example, we had October average hourly earnings. Now, this one was interesting. It was expected to be up 0.3%. It was up 0.4% month on month. And so as a result of that, the annual growth in average hourly earnings has lifted one notch from 3.9% up to 4%. Now, really, the Fed would like to see that one coming back the opposite direction, getting down towards about 3.5%. At the moment, it's actually migrating higher rather than lower. And the unemployment rate for the month of October, well, that stayed down at a low 4.1%, same as the month before. So a lot of this is suggesting that the US economy is still running relatively too strong with relatively too sticky inflation to allow the Fed to bring down rates particularly fast. At the same time, obviously, we've got the presidential election coming up this week. And the one factor which is really missing as far as either candidate's concerned is any sense of urgency that they need to get on top of ballooning US government debt. In fact, rather the opposite. Both candidates are promising to spend more rather than less in different directions. In the case of Donald Trump, it will largely be tax cutting. And in the case of Kamala Harris, it will largely be continuing to reinforce the Social Security and welfare net. But I haven't heard either candidate even mention getting on top of US government debt. So that's a problem as well. And so we get through to the FOMC meeting, which comes the day after the election. We'll get the result from the FOMC meeting. And, you know, the Fed won't be able to continue cutting at 50 basis points, you know, the way it did in the first cut. At best, it can do 25 basis points, which will bring the funds rate down to 4.75. And it will probably have to issue a warning that, you know, basically we've got to run slower in terms of cutting rates as we go ahead. Yes, we can continue to cut rates, but it will be a pretty elongated and slow process relative to what, you know, we have done in the past. So just watching those developments as we go through the course of this week. As far as the election is concerned, on the 5th of November, we really won't see much results out of that until well and truly into late Thursday, even going into Friday our time. It, you know, it'll take that time to count most of the votes. And you know, at this stage, it's still pretty much line ball. All of the opinion polls there are within a margin of error for a very, very close result. So at this stage, difficult to call. Regardless of who wins it, you know, one of the key features for markets is that both candidates will continue to pursue a comparatively expansionary monetary policy setting, fiscal policy setting, with the way they spend money. It will just be in different directions, taking out taxes for Donald Trump, and as I say, moving money towards towards social security and welfare spending for Kamala Harris. Remembering also that it's not like our elections; they don't change president on the day after the election. Joe Biden will continue to be the president all the way through to Inauguration Day, and Inauguration Day is in January next year. So whoever wins is the president in waiting, and has to deal with Joe Biden with issues all the way through to January next year, before we get the new US president taking office. Just moving to some of the other indicators elsewhere, China, we've had purchasing managers' indices coming out of China, and they all look just slightly better. So we had the October manufacturing PMI came out. It lifted to 50.1 from 49.8, so slight improvement running through that. The non-manufacturing PMI lifted from 50 to 50.2. So slight improvement there. We also had the October cakes in manufacturing PMI came out, and that one had quite a jump. It went from 49.3 up to 50.3, so slightly better readings just coming out of China. This week out of China, we'll get the cakes in services sector PMI. That comes out on Tuesday. That was at 50.3, probably coming around about 50.5 when that reading comes out. We've got some trade data coming out, which is expected to stay soft back in September. Exports are up only 0.3% year-on-year. Imports are up 2.4% year-on-year. Probably not much better than that with the numbers we get this week. And on Friday, we get the latest CPI and producer price index readings for October out of China. And those ones, the annual rate of growth in the CPI, probably even edging down to 0.3% year-on-year from 0.4%. And producer prices still minus 2.5% year on year, the market thinks, when that comes out the month of October, from minus 2.8. Now to Australia. And yeah, obviously we had the CPI came out for the third quarter last week. And yeah, the headline CPI, well, you know, sort of it looks as if we're back inside 2 to 3% target range, with the CPI coming out at plus 0.2%. And reducing the annual inflation rate to 2.8% from 3.8%. The problem with that 0.2 is that if you took out the subsidies from the various federal government and state governments for energy prices, and the large fall that ran through petrol prices, the CPI would have been 0.7 percentage points higher. It would have been around 0.9. And so you've been looking at a very different result. And that showed in the underlying inflation rate. And probably the key one there is the trim mean, which Reserve Bank looks at very carefully and judges that as a far better mark of what inflation's doing. That came in at 0.8% quarter on quarter. And that was, they revised the previous quarter actually upwards from 0.8 to 0.9. The annual rate of inflation did come down, but not as much. It came down from 3.9% down to 3.5%. And other measures of inflation, which the Reserve Bank's watching, things like the weighted median, that came down from 4.2% to 3.8%, so still very much high threes. And service sector inflation actually went up a bit between Q2 and Q3, and that was a worry. It lifted from 4.1% year-on-year to 4.3%. So you know, the underlying part of the inflation story last week was worrying as far as the Reserve Bank's concerned, and we'll see that reflected, I think, in what they say in the RBA meeting today. Also, some of the other indicators that came out last week. We had some fairly strong indicators. We had September retail sales. It came in at 0.1%, but that was after a 0.7% increase the month before, so it consolidated that very strong gain from the month before. And Q3 retail sales, for the first time this year, the volume of retail sales rose. We've had negatives all the way through this year so far until Q3. In fact, the quarter before was minus 0.4% quarter on quarter. That jumped to plus 0.5% for the most recent quarter, so a little bit of strength running through there. We had September home loans came out. They lifted by 0.1%. That came after a very strong rise of 2.4% the month before, so that was relatively firm. We had home building approvals. They lifted by 4.4% month on month. And we also had third quarter producer prices. And final stage producer prices are still running pretty high. It came in at 0.9% quarter on quarter. That was after a 1% rise the quarter before. Yes, it brought the annual rate back, but to 3.9% from 4.8%. So the pipeline for inflation is still looking quite strong. So moving into this week, you know, we've got a couple of numbers today. We've got Melbourne Institute inflation gauge for the most recent month. Going back a month ago, it's up 0.1% month on month. It'll be a little bit higher than that for the most recent month. We also had ANZ job ads. They're coming out today for the most recent month. Last month, they had actually a reasonable lift, up 1.6%. And then we get the RBA decision on Tuesday, but this is also the one where we also get the quarterly statement of monetary policy. And the quarterly statement of monetary policy, which provides the forecast, which will inform the committee when they're looking at rates. A few things are going to be happening in there as far as the forecasts are concerned. Everything to do with the labour market's got to be revised stronger through the forecast period because of the way things have moved in the numbers since August. So that's one part of it. Also, there's a fair chance that whilst they might be able to tweak slightly lower very near-term inflation indicators, they're probably going to have to tweak higher the ones going out in the second half of next year, going into 2026. In other words, inflation's looking stickier for longer, above 3% as we get out into late next year and into the following year. All of this suggests that it's still going to be quite some time before they can actually bring interest rates down. So already we've got markets have pushed out more to May next year, when the first interest rate cut can come. That's probably going to be reinforced by everything that the RBA does later today. And of course, the cash rate, no change. It'll stay at 4.35%, and it's going to be there probably through to the middle part of next year now. That'll be occurring at a time when all those people have been cutting overseas too, are going to be going somewhat slower as well. So there's going to be some pressure points just feeding through over there too. Moving on to that, we can look at Europe, and there, again, we had their preliminary Q3 GDP, and it was just a bit better than expected. The market was looking for Q3 GDP in Europe to come in at 0.2%, came in at 0.4% quarter on quarter. And so that's lifted the annual growth rates in Europe from 0.2% to 0.9%. Germany is still one of the weakest of the economies there, but there's some beginnings of some strength running in some of the peripheral European economies. So just some improvement running through there. We had the preliminary October CPI came out too. And you know, this illustrates about inflation just starting to get sticky in many places. Europe's got the best chance of getting inflation down because growth is comparatively soft, even though it's shown some sign of improvement there in Q3. Well, the preliminary October CPI came out at 0.3% month on month, and that lifted the annual inflation rate back up to 2% from 1.7%. Also, the core CPI. That came in at 0.2%. That kept the annual core inflation rate steady at 2.7%. So just getting a little bit stickier there. And also the September unemployment rate came out for Europe. And that one, they revised down the previous month to 6.3%. That's now a record low, or a low of the last quarter of the century since before the turn of the century, is stayed down at 6.3%. So we've still got that tightness running through the European labour market as well. Over in the UK, we had another thing which is just worrying bond markets. It's not just inflation starting to get sticky. Central banks may not be able to bring rates down quite as far and as fast as before. In the case of the RBA, we're taking us longer before we can even get to bringing down interest rates. It's these concerns that governments don't get it, that they've got to really get on top of government debt, and that the clock's ticking on that, where bond markets are just not going to be prepared to fund these very large debts that governments have built up. We had in the UK their spring budget statement, and it worried bond markets even more, because basically there was extra taxation in there, but there was what they took in extra taxation, they increased spending even more. So real spending is running much faster in the UK after the spring statement. And sure, they tried to make the taxes not hurt the general public. So one of the things that went up there was a social security and welfare payment, which is largely paid by employers, but that becomes an additional cost for employers. So it's some problems running through the UK budget there. And remembering that the UK government got back with a huge majority, if they were going to prioritise really getting on top of government debt, this should have been the statement where they did it. And it's a sort of warning sign elsewhere. And we can even bring that home to here. In the same week that we got the Treasurer trying to say, look, we've been on top of government spending. Well, they haven't, because government spending is rising strongly in real terms. We get the first salvo for our election. And what was it at the weekend? Oh, we're going to spend another so many billion dollars by wiping out a proportion of student debt and lifting the threshold on that. So these spending decisions just keep coming out of the woodwork, and an indication that everywhere around the world, this is problematic as far as the bond market's concerned. So it's not surprising that through this last month we've seen pretty substantial lift in bond yields, and they're going to take more time to come down again this time, I think, and it may be a case that they go higher before they do. So just watching all these factors, and of course those higher bond yields are then, even though you've got reasonably firm economic activity starting to build around the world, it's just becoming a headwind for risk assets as we move ahead as well.